Robinhood Radio presents Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willems. Michelle is a longtime journalist and herself is a published playwright of several theatrical works. She's a frequent contributor to the Huffington Post, Daily Beast, and the Atlantic websites.
So this week I saw four performances of sorts, though only one qualifies as a real theatrical production, at least so far. The average theatergoer is often unaware of how long a road so many plays have traveled before people start paying for them. Well, this week I witnessed a few of those stops along the way. Well, let's start with a show that is enjoying a New York run as we speak. Some Old Black Man is a two-character piece that is selling out almost every performance at 59 East 59th. Why? Well, I would guess it's because one of the characters is played by Wendell Pierce, who many of us know and love from TV series like The Wire and Tremé. The other reason for the strong turnout may be that here is a play that, while it speaks of issues anyone with an aging parent can relate to, also deals with African-American characters and their opposing views of what that means today. I was certainly happy to be among a truly diverse audience, which I guess proves if you tell their stories and don't charge ridiculous prices, they will come. Some Old Black Man is written by James Anthony Tyler. It's 90 minutes in length, no intermission. We are inside an obviously successful man's Harlem penthouse, into which he has just moved his reluctant father from his lifetime home in Mississippi. The old man, a widower, has started to fall and forget and leave appliances running. The son is a professor who attended Ivy League schools, married a white woman who's also deceased, and made very different choices in his life. Things are pretty combustible right from the start. There is a great deal of humor, though. Just watch the expression of the cranky, resentful father, played beautifully by Roger Robinson, when he is served a yogurt parfait. "This is breakfast," he asks. When he starts putting some of his favorite items, like an old quilt, around, the son, portrayed by Wendell Pierce, asks, "Doesn't this look tacky to you?" The audience is seduced from beginning to end, even though some of the conversation and setups are stodgy at times. I kept thinking of old-fashioned plays like The Subject Was Roses and Rarely Ventured Out of the Kitchen. This could be one of those, with contemporary names like Bill Cosby and Biggie Small thrown in. I don't necessarily see Some Old Black Men moving upward or even onward, though it brings up interesting issues about race and, more important, how to take care of our elders. And as I said, it was wonderful to see theatergoers of all shades and ages in one room together. Now, of course, all plays start on a page and then eventually, hopefully, after countless workshops and readings, they get up on their feet. Things usually begin around a table for the playwright to hear the words out loud. Rewriting begins. Then it moves on to readings for friends, family, potential investors. The playwright then goes back and tweaks some more. Well, there are countless of these going on every day in the city. This past week, I attended a very good one. It's a stage reading. Now, what does that mean exactly? Well, the actors are all holding their scripts, but they do move around, though things are not officially blocked. The one I saw was called Radio 930, Children of the Revolution. It's a musical with a long subtitle, How Rock and Roll Helped Bring Down the Berlin Wall. As is usual with these, what I saw was a truncated version. No stage directions were read, as they often are in early readings. Then they leave out some of the dialogue in between many songs. As anyone in musical theater will tell you, it is the book that usually becomes the biggest challenge to get right. This one hopes to use all known songs by artists like Hendrix and the Moody Blues. The large cast I saw was excellent. Who knows how many will remain as it makes its way into the next rounds. Actors do often commit to do the workshops as long as they are guaranteed the roles when the show goes up. The action in Radio 930 takes place in the late 70s when the wall separated the two halves of Berlin. It's primarily about informing and colluding and the power of young people banding together to bring about freedom. Sound familiar? I kept thinking of the young people of Parkland today and how they are not the first to realize what they are capable of changing. Well, I have hopes for this show, and seems to have a commitment to go up about a year from now, so we shall see. Now, there are also places like the 92nd Street Y, and frankly, there aren't too many like the 92nd Street Y, that present theatrical events of such high quality, most notably its narrated concert series called Lyrics and Lyricists. I spoke about the Bobby Darin story a few weeks back. That one is already being discussed as possible Broadway material. This week I saw Lenny's Lyricist, a delightful review of Bernstein's collaborators on shows like Candide, On the Town, Wonderful Town, and of course West Side Story. Five singers, each with a resume a mile long, performed the songs beautifully, and the narrator was Amanda Green, the daughter of Adolph, who along with Betty Comden wrote some of the shows with Bernstein. She was filled with interesting tidbits. Who knew that her father and Comden turned down West Side Story, which is why I buy it off the rack, she joked. Who knew one of the composer's first works was called It's Not So Hotsy-Totsy Being a Nazi, or that the opening prologue of West Side Story actually had lyrics before it went strictly instrumental. Some of those lyrics were performed by the three male singers at the Y, I think for the first time. And let me just say, it was better they left them out. Who knew that Bernstein was writing West Side Story and Candide simultaneously, and some of the ideas for one ended up in the other? Lyrics and Lyricists, which Rob Fisher has been overseeing for 35 years, is almost always as good as anything you'll find on any stage in the city. And finally, there are the small, often struggling theater companies that continue to come up with new and inventive ways to get people into their venues. For example, the Rattlestick Theater in West Village is a well-respected upstairs house that presents edgy and original material. Artistic director Daniela Topol just presented an unusual evening of actors reading from three novels. Well, it was a way to bring the books to life, to give the actors work, and yes, to get some new folks inside the Rattlestick. One of the authors, Nina Darton, who had her latest book called Risking It All, read, and she later told me, I hadn't even thought of my book as a possible play, but when I heard the actors interpreting it in a different way from my imagination, well, I started to think maybe I could write it that way. My point here is that there are all kinds of ways to enjoy theatrical happenings without paying a fortune and getting a taste of what may be coming, Jill.
Well, it's always interesting to watch the sausage being made, so to speak.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
And the more, I would just say, and I say it all the time, but it's just a wonderful juxtaposition with live theater. But the more screened people get, and there are obviously a lot of young kids who don't know anything but a screen, the more important it is to see all of the bits.
Right.
Actually moving around and how it gets onto the screen. Because when you start trying to figure out how to put it on the screen, that's the first place that it comes a little, you know, it becomes clear that, wow, unless you actually, again, know the pieces, you're
that's
not.
That's right. I remember Tony Kushner telling me a couple of years back that he was, at that time, he was writing Lincoln, the movie for Spielberg. And he said they were doing these readings of it in Los Angeles and New York, and it was sort of the first time I'd realized that movie scripts also have these readings all the time, and I think they've borrowed that from the stage. Somebody like Kushner, of course, comes from the theater, so more writers like that understand that the value of hearing the words out loud, and that, you know, it's more than just what's written on the page. You got to hear the words. And you got to have people come listen, and you find out when they laugh, when they don't laugh, what works, when were they bored, you know.
When are they twitching? Yeah, and that's another thing that happens, and it's another parallel is, you know, when you write an email, for example, you are writing what you're thinking. You know, you're writing in your own head what you're thinking.
Right.
The recipient doesn't have that, let's call it intonation.
That's right.
So they actually are reading whatever they're reading, which is what you've written, technically. It is. But the room for misunderstanding, misinterpretation, misapprehension is large.
Oh yeah, especially with humor, I would say, because
there's no humor. I mean, you cannot be responsible, and that, of course, for something to work in an entertainment sense, you know, you've got to know literally. Remember the old saying, "How does it play in Peoria?"
Yeah.
Now that's another crucial factor that let's just say our entertaining forebears understood that might be is certainly shall we say. Edited out of any political understanding at the moment.
That's right. That's right. No, certain plays, there's no doubt certain works will play better in one place than another. If they're only thinking New York, that's one thing. If they're thinking about taking on the road, you have to be very careful. Sometimes people even change things once they've had a run somewhere and they, oh God, nobody there knew what we were talking about. Well, so things change along the way, but in terms of just getting a show up is a lot of work, and oh my God, years of readings. It's so rare that something, you know, Aaron Sorkin's doing To Kill a Mockingbird, as you know, he's adapting it. It was finally announced this week again that it'll probably go up next November. So it was first announced 3 years ago, I believe, that he was going to be adapting this, which I can't even imagine what those readings are going to be like. I would kill to get in one of those. That has got to be a huge challenge. But I'm saying, even a writer like Aaron Sorkin, who's won every award known to man and woman, has to hear it. You know, this is a tricky one. You got to know how it's going to play, and you got to have important people listening.
Yeah, I think that it's just... it's across the boards, once again, understanding that just because you have an idea and you've written it, this has nothing to do with Aaron Sorkin, it has everything to do with just the end user not quite realizing that the different bits of actually taking an idea and making it into a format where people can comfortably or uncomfortably watch it, follow it, and know what you're trying to say is not a one-step, you know, it's not an instantaneous process.
I know. And some things work in one format that won't work in another, which is why I think that was a clever idea, hearing books read out loud and maybe giving those authors the idea, oh, maybe this would work better as a play than it did as a book, or it's another way for people to enjoy the story. So this mixing and matching of mediums is, it's good for everyone.
Stage Right or Not with Michelle Willens, produced in the studios of Robin Hood Radio, robinhoodradio.com.